All right. Hey, guys, what's going on? Welcome to the Locked On Wizards podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Troy Halliburton, your host. Today, I'm joined on the line by my guy, Neil DeLaw from Hoop District. This is take three on the Hoop District crossover podcast, man. How are you feeling today, Neil?
Pretty good, Troy. How about yourself?
I mean, I'm feeling pretty good, man. We sat down yesterday after the press conference of the Monumental Basketball official announcement, and we recorded a great podcast. I leave the arena. I go play basketball, and some little kids swipe my phone, taking all my podcasts off of there. So, I mean, it's that was a struggle, but you know what? The reel can never be stopped.
For sure, as Lil Yachty said, man.
F
these kids, yo.
Lil Yachty said it, so we're going to rock with it. But I'm glad to get you back on here so that we can sit back and talk about all the things that are going on with Monumental Sports or Monumental Basketball, I should say. So yesterday we were both at the press conference where Ted Leonsis announced that Monumental Sports will be branching off. They have a new branch, which will be called Monumental Basketball, which will be I guess we were unclear whether that would be headed up by Tommy Shepard, but we do know that Tommy Shepard is the new GM of the Wizards. So, you know, that official announcement was kind of woven in to the rest of the Monumental Basketball announcements. But we have Sashi Brown from the Cleveland Browns. He used to be the general manager there. He's going to be coming in to the Wizards as the vice president of chief planning and operations. Then we have John Thompson III, who's coming in as a vice president of development and engagement. And we have Dr. Daniel Medina, who's coming in as the chief of athlete care and performance. So let's take a step back and like kind of look back and evaluate those three newcomers into the Monumental Sports family and what we think about what they're going to be able to bring to the table.
Yeah, so like I think you and Mike Sykes on your first podcast that kind of talked about it, that they need to bring in more people, you know, the front office, and you know, maybe this is not necessarily going to be considered the Wizards front office, but they kind of needed more guys in the room, guys and women in the room, to kind of just be able to bounce ideas off of each other. Everybody bring their different perspectives and things. Ted talked about yesterday about having more diversity, not necessarily skin color or whatever, but just more perspective in the room. And I'm certainly sure that Sashi Brown can obviously bring that to the table. You know, he'll have the unique perspective, kind of a football mindset. Daniel Medina, he spent a couple seasons with the 76ers the last couple of years, but he's coming more from a soccer background. He was the team physician for FC Barcelona for almost a decade. And then obviously John Thompson III, you know, again, basketball, but the college level, not necessarily the pro level. So it's definitely a lot of intermix of different areas of sports that are now coming together.
Yeah, I think that, like you said, what Ted said, diversity doesn't necessarily mean, you know, kind of ethnicity or gender. You know, it's just bringing different perspectives in. And so when we look at Sashi Brown, I think that the perspective that he brings, you know, coming in from the NFL, where, you know, I think that, you know, they're really into, you know, kind of the numbers movement. And, you know, he kind of he didn't label himself this, but people labeled him the, you know, the Sam Hinkie of the NFL. So I think that and with him being in on like the operations side, I think that it'll be good to kind of have him be able to manage a lot of the day to day activities of a general manager, so that, you know, that could leave Tommy Shepard some room to that he can, you know, focus on the basketball activities instead of, you know, spending, you know, all of his day in the office focusing on the operations aspect of it. So I think in that sense, bringing Sashi Brown and his perspective from the NFL will be a huge plus for what the team has going on. The John Thompson III hiring, that might seem like the most confusing as far as what it is that he's going to be doing. But I mean, I think that from what I can infer from yesterday's press conference is that Ted Leonsis wants Monumental Basketball to be more of a I don't know, more of grassroots in the community. So he spoke of, you know, trying to build, you know, courts and playgrounds for kids and, you know, maybe even looking into starting up an AAU program. He mentioned how he was jealous of, you know, Brad and John's successful AAU programs and that, you know, he kind of wants to get in the business too. So I think that, you know, these guys bring, you know, different perspectives. And, you know, the phrase that Ted kept using yesterday was many hands makes for lighter work. So really, this is all to get Tommy Shepard to make his transition a lot easier. And so let's dive into what we feel about Tommy Shepard being officially named GM, because that's probably the most important announcement that was made over the weekend. What do you think about Tommy and what he's done so far in having gone to earn Ted's trust and earn that interim tag being taken off?
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of people who might be listening might think, okay, this is Ernie Grunfeld's right-hand man. This is Ernie Grunfeld era 2.0. But I think you should settle down on that kind of take and kind of let Tommy do his job and see how things go before judging him too quickly. Because I think he's already made clear that this is no longer going to be a win-now mentality for the Wizards. You know, that's kind of been their mentality for the past, you know, six-ish years, you know, it's kind of been like, we expect to get those playoffs, we expect to compete, things like that. Ernie would go almost out of his way to ensure that the team makes the playoffs, whether it's dealing first-round picks to bring in the likes of Marquise Morris or Bojan Bogdanović. He kind of mortgages the future to make sure that they can win now and be as competitive as they can now. But that's not going to be the case under Tommy Shepard. In his less than 4 months as interim general manager, you know, he's already brought in a lot of young talent, brought back in a few second-round picks that Ernie Grunfeld used to pass out, like takeout flyers. And so pretty much he's kind of pivoted the entire organizational philosophy that the Wizards have had under Grunfeld. So the idea that he's Grunfeld 2.0 almost couldn't be more wrong. It's almost like he's a polar opposite of the guy that he was just working for, which is really interesting. And I think some people would describe it as a breath of fresh air. I think it's just more so just catching up with the rest of the league and how things are going.
Yeah, I think a breath of fresh air would be a good way to describe it as people who actually lived through the Ernie Grunfeld era and the Ernie Grunfeld media availability. You know, I think that when we're talking about Tommy Shepard, I mean, he's a very personable person. You know, he you know, he looks you in your eye, he shakes your hand, he asks you, you know, quick questions. You know, I've gotten a chance to build a little bit of a relationship with him over the last couple of years. I mean, and he's a great guy. But I mean, it's more than, you know, for taking over this job than just being a great guy. And as you mentioned, I mean, he's done things, he's done tangible things that would allow us to believe that, you know, this is going to be completely different from when Ernie was running the show. You know, just as you said, instead of him mortgaging the future, you know, he's in the asset acquisition business. So, I mean, he's already bringing in asset. And I think I saw a quote from him earlier today where he said, you know, we got a lot of bunts and singles. But, you know, that's the key to getting on base, and getting on base is how you score runs. So if we're looking at, you know, possibly getting towards the future and figuring this thing out, I mean, we're going to need to, you know, stack up a couple of these singles so we can get some men on base so we can try to figure out what's going on. And I feel like the singles that he's referring to is, you know, the trade for Davis Bertans. You know, we got him from San Antonio for essentially nothing. The trade for C.J. Miles, a shooter who they acquired by trading away Dwight Howard and what was described as the quickest trade that he's ever had to make, even though he clarified those comments saying that it was only because, you know, they called and he got the deal done quick, not that he was hastily trying to move Dwight. I think he did that. That's how great Tommy is as a guy, because – you know, he instead of, you know, he knows that it looks like he was throwing Dwight under the bus. So he automatically comes out and, you know, kind of nips that in the butt. So and then we go to the draft pick, the drafting of Rui and the drafting of Hashimura and the signing of Justin Robinson and Garrison Matthews. It's like he's stacking up all of these singles So what do you think about some of those moves? And if you had to pick one in particular, which one would you say was the best move that he made?
Yeah, so I think there are a lot of things about what you're saying that's completely true. You know, I think the alternate route that he could have gone was, okay, our team is going to not be a bunch of singles. We're going to have a bunch of kind of crappy players that are always going to get out. But then we'll have the one home run hitter, Bradley Beal, who maybe every once in a while might hit a home run. He's trying to put people around him that, you know, can get on base in front of him, things like that. So we're going to go with the baseball analogy. But I think he, like you said, stacked up a lot of different moves. He brought in a bunch of second-round picks for the future, brought in a bunch of guys, Mo Wagner, Isaac Bonga, Jamario Jones, guys who are on rookie-scale contracts, which he really loves. I don't know if there's one in particular that I would say that's great. I think if I had to pick one, I would go with Admiral Schofield, the second-round pick. Not so much just because I'm in love with the player or anything like that. I really do like his mentality. One funny thing he said at Summer League when somebody asked him what position does he play, since we're all trying to figure that out, he's kind of a tweener four. He didn't answer with the classic answer, oh, I play the three, I play the four. He said, I'm a winner. That was his response. So I really love his mentality in that way. But who knows what kind of a player he's going to be. But I think the idea that Tommy went out and bought a second-round pick was really eye-opening to me. Obviously, he paid, say, around $3 million to the 76ers when you include the $1 million of dead cap that they had to waive Jonathan Simmons with. But I just think the mentality change that, okay, we're going to go out. We'd like this guy in the second round. We're not going to wait around for somebody else to take him. We're going to go get our guy. And so he made the deal, got their guy. And I think that's just another differentiator between Tommy Shepard and Ernie Grunfeld and how things are different now compared to the past.
Yeah, I mean, I love the Admiral Schofield pick. I love the process in which they were able to acquire that draft pick, as you just alluded to. I think that it'll be very good to get a good character guy in, a guy who's a phenomenal athlete. I mean, you know, we were there watching him at the Summer League mini camp. You know, this dude looks like a defensive end. Like, the dude's ripped. So, I mean, I think that...
said himself, he's like, oh, I'm not... Some people call me a three, some people call me a four, heck, some people call me a linebacker. And I was like... Yeah, he do look like a linebacker.
Exactly. I mean, he looks smack like a linebacker. So I think that, you know, I think that he's a different type of player. And it shows that the team is really thinking outside the box, which I think was also a little bit of a complaint of the Ernie Grunfeld era, where, you know, it felt like a lot of their moves were kind of just, you know, kicking the can down the road, just run of the mill, transactional stuff. Whereas Tommy has already been in place for, well, as the interim tag for 4 months and now running officially for 2 days now. But, you know, even still while he was running the show, you know, that he's thinking outside the box and he's not just going to, you know, do the average thing. He's not going to go out and, you know, take the popular players that, you know, he's going to take some of this information and data that he's getting, the sports science stuff that they're really trying to get into, and look into drafting players who they think are going to be able to, you know, not only play for a little while, but able to contribute on the level early on. But you also mentioned your Summer League experience. Tell the people a little bit about your first time being out in Vegas for NBA Summer League, and also having to fight through media scrums of 40, 50 Japanese media to talk to Rui Hachimura.
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting experience, to say the least. I think it's a lot, really cool experience also from the basketball side of things, of just getting in there, seeing it's kind of the unofficial party of the summer for the NBA. Everybody's there, players, executives, coaches, and obviously the rookies and other young players are playing out there. The Wizards had obviously Rui Hachimura, Admiral Schofield, Justin Robinson, Garrison Matthews, along with Troy Brown Jr., coming back for his second season. And it was kind of interesting now looking back at it, because John Thompson III, the former Hoos coach, who's now part of Monumental Basketball, was out there and chit-chatting with the organization. So it all kind of makes sense now, what was going on then. But as far as the actual playing, obviously Hachimura looked really good. He's kind of subtle in his game where you're watching it and you're like, okay, yeah, like he's decent. He's doing pretty well. And you look at the box score later and you're like, holy cow, he put up 20 and 10? When did that happen? There was one right after halftime, third quarter, he was just dominating people. He had like four or five buckets in a row, and he was just making it look easy. Obviously, things would be a lot different once he's playing against the real grown men of the NBA, and you'll have to see how far he develops, because obviously he's not going to be some all-star right off the bat or anything like that. But there's definitely some promise for the Wizards, and that's kind of what you have to do. They have all of these young guys, you know, even Mo Wagner, Isaac Bonga, Jamario Jones are out there. They're just stockpiling like eight young players, and so maybe you don't hit on all of them, but if you hit on three or four of them and they're good rotation players, maybe one ends up pops out to be a star one day. That's what you got to do. You don't necessarily want quantity over quality, but if you're getting a lot of quantity that you can take flyers on, and that you still think of as quality based on whatever analytics tell you, gut feelings tell you, that's going to help out in the long term, especially in the days where everybody's getting paid these really ridiculously large contracts with the Supermaxes. Getting guys on these rookie scale contracts is going to be really important, and that's what the Wizards are trying to do here.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's very important to try to stack up and hit on as many of these, second round or undrafted flyers, because at the end of the day, like, you know, they're in a situation where, you know, they're going to be strapped for cash going forward. Where they already have John Wall, who's under a supermax, and they have Brad Beal, who's under a max contract. So, I mean, they really don't have a lot of money on throughout the rest of the roster. I mean, they don't have enough money under the salary cap to, you know, fill out the rest of the roster with, mid-level exception guys. You know, they really only have enough to get, minimum guys in there. So if they could possibly hit on a couple of these guys, that will definitely bode well for them going forward when they'll possibly have to extend Bradley Beal again, which is a perfect segue into the next thing I want to talk about, which is all the information. Woj, who happened to be at the press conference yesterday, shout out Woj. Yeah, but he's been tweeting out. He was the first one to first initiate the talks of the Wizards possibly offering Bradley Beal a 3-year, $111 million contract extension. I believe he did that on the ESPN draft preview special. But he's also tweeted it out a couple of times since then. So how do you feel about the contract offer that the Wizards are going to give him? And do you think that Bradley Beal will take that offer?
Yeah, so obviously, Woj wrote that story early Monday afternoon before the actual Monumental Basketball press conference. Tommy has already pretty much confirmed all of that publicly and on the record that on Friday, when the Wizards are first allowed to, under the CBA, offer Bradley Beal a 3-year, $111 million extension, that they will be doing that. He views that as, this is out of respect to Brad and what Brad means to us, what we think of Brad. He doesn't necessarily expect Brad to give him a decision anytime soon. He understands that, you know, Brad needs to talk to his family. He should consider that he's about to have his second son coming on the way in a few weeks. He has to talk to his agent, Mark Bartlestein. I know you're a big fan of.
Yeah, Mark Bartlestein getting that bag, man. I'm a big fan, man. Hey, what's up, Mark Bartlestein? Holla at your boy, man.
Yeah, so, and I think it's fairly clear from a money standpoint that it would not be wise for Brad to take this $111 million extension offer, say, next year. They can offer him a 4-year extension at about $154 million. If he were to get All-NBA, he could get a 5-year extension of $254 million. Even if he just goes out and becomes a free agent, you know, he could sign a 5-year max contract extension without a super max. I guess by then it wouldn't be an extension if he's a free agent. But that would be, around $217 million. Even if he wanted to sign with another team when he becomes a free agent, he can do that for 4 years, $161 million. So it just really doesn't make sense, barring some catastrophic injury, knock on wood. It just wouldn't make sense for Brad to commit to this team who he also doesn't know what they're going to be like. Obviously, things on paper look better than the very bleak future that they had, say, just a few months ago. But he still is going to want to see how that plays out. So, to me, it just makes no sense for him to take less money to stay in a situation that still has a lot of unknowns when he's a guy that's very competitive, craves winning, and he's not going to be sure of whether that's going to be actually happening in D.C. or not. So I don't see him signing this contract extension for 3 years.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. You know, it really just doesn't make financial sense for him to sign this contract extension early when, I mean, he could literally, like you said, he could wait next year and sign the same exact deal and get more money. Like, that just, it just makes more financial sense. You know, and, you know, regardless of, you know, whatever the financial implications are, I mean, we're talking about Brad. You know, Brad's a, he's a winner. Like, Brad wants to win. And I know that, you know, Brad is a loyal guy, but I don't think that the Wizards should be in a position where they're taking his loyalty for granted. And, you know, they have to kind of prove to him that, you know, they're making the right steps as an organization that, you know, he'll want to sign up for a few more years and, you know, try to get this franchise back to a plateau that they haven't been able to reach in 40 years, which is winning 50 games and making it to a conference finals at least. So, you know, I mean, I think that there's a lot of reasons that Brad probably will not take the deal. And I think that's why I'm glad that we're having this conversation so that, you know, we can kind of walk back Wizards fans who will be on the ledge, you know, saying that, oh, man, we got to trade Brad. This is all bad, you know, if he turns the deal down next week.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's a great point that people might want to know that Tom Shepherd is essentially scoffing at the idea that if Brad turns him down, then they have to start looking to move him either before the season or by the next February 2020 trade deadline or the following season after that, where he still has 1 year left on his contract. Tommy Shepherd, unless he's told otherwise by people above him, which, you know, always could be the case, everybody has a boss, but he's going to try and take the full amount of these 2 years that they have him left on contract and sell him on the idea of you can win in Washington. You can be a great multi all-star player here. You can build a Hall of Fame career here. You can retire your jersey here. You can bring a championship here if all goes well. That's what they're going to try and sell him on over the next 2 years. And I don't see, unless someone's offering up four or five first-round picks and four talents, I just don't see them even entertaining any offers for Beal over at least the next coming months. Obviously, things can change fast, but Tommy Shepherd has pretty much shut the door on the entire league that has come asking about Bradley Beal.
Yeah, man, if I were a betting man, I'd say that Brad will be on the Wizards at least through next year's NBA draft. I'd feel confident in saying that. Now, obviously, things can change a lot between now and then, and I think that, you know, even if this ship looks like it's going to start sinking, there might be a lot of rumbling starting up around the trade deadline. But I honestly believe that it would be advantageous for the Wizards to at least wait through next year's draft, or I mean, through until you get to next year's draft, and then kind of figure it out from there. Like, I mean, Bradley Beal's under contract for two more years. There's really no rush to this process. So, I mean, and I'll do another segue here. I said, as a betting man, one of the things that we talked about previously was the fact that the Wizards over under for win total next year is 27.5 wins. So how do you feel about that win total? And do you think the Wizards will come over or under that?
I think they're going to go barely over that. I think they're going to hit that 28-30 win mark. They are going to be a really bad defensive team. Isaiah Thomas, so as much as firepower as he could potentially bring if he returns to form, not a great defender. Thomas Bryant, not really that great of a defender. Got a lot of young guys on the team they're going to have their hiccups and mistakes here and there. The team is not going to be very good defensively, but I think they'll be able to catch some teams that they should lose to, sleeping some nights. Saying yesterday, they're going to be the opposite of the Wizards of the past couple seasons. They're going to be the sub 500 team that are upsetting some of these playoff contenders on any random night. It's not going to be the South Beach flu, but you know, DC flu has a little bit of effect on teams. So maybe they'll catch some teams from sleeping. They'll pick up some games. They have, you know, a decently competitive roster. You know, Isaiah Thomas regains any of that 2016-17 sparkle that he had. That would be an amazing story, and then he automatically becomes a guy that could be dropping 20 a game. Obviously, Bradley Beal is amazing. You got Troy Brown, Rui Hachimura, Thomas Bryant as a trio of very young developing players that have showed a little bit of promise here and there. And then you got some depth off the bench, you know, Davis Bertans and CJ Miles, who they acquired in trades. You know, they're no slouches. They're elite 3-point shooters. And in the way that Washington and Tommy wants the team to play, they're going to be fast. They're going to be shooting a lot of threes. That's what the analytics tell them. And that, again, that's another stark difference between the Ernie Grunfeld era and what I think we'll see under the Tom Shepard era is a whole lot of analytics.
Yeah, I think that we'll see a whole lot of analytics. And I think one of the people that we failed to mention earlier on was my guy, Brett Greenberg, who also was promoted from vice president of basketball analytics to now assistant GM. And he was probably one of the thought leaders in trying to get the team to play different over the last season. So, you know, whereas they went from the Randy Whitman era where they were taking a lot of long twos and, you know, a lot of just not good analytic shots, you know, they've been playing a little bit better. And whereas the results really weren't there last year, I mean, I don't know how many times that we were in post-game press conferences with Scott Brooks, and he talked about, I mean, well, we shot the threes, we just didn't make them. You know, that seemed to happen a lot last year. So, you know, whereas they had guys maybe where the roster wasn't really fit to play the style of play that they wanted to play last season, when you bringing in guys like Bertans and CJ Miles, who, you know, are going to be, you know, stretch forwards, maybe that will be more conducive to them playing that playing style and, you know, trying to come out there and win some games. I think that 27.5 wins is just way too low, especially when you're considering having a borderline all NBA talent such as Bradley Beal. I mean, I'm taking the over on that. And I feel quite confident about it.
Yeah, fair enough. And to your point, I think 2 years ago, when it feels so long ago, when they won 49 games and were Kelly Olynyk not being Larry Bird away from making the Eastern Conference Finals, they were shooting 37.8% from three, which was good for fourth best in all of the NBA. And I believe last season, I don't know the percentage, but I'm pretty sure they were in like bottom five or bottom 10 for 3-point shooting percentage, even though they were taking so many more, which a lot of people liked. But like you said, when you have Bradley Beal, CJ Miles, and Davis Bertans shooting, hopefully, you know, maybe for 23 pointers a game, you know, they might hit 8 to 12 of them a game between the three of them themselves. So, yeah. Chuck them up and let them fly, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited to see what the team is going to look like. I'm excited to see the team chuck it up and shoot as many threes as possible. What I'm not really excited about is the fact that with one of those threes just so happens to go in towards the end of the game, we will no longer be getting a dagger call from our guy Steve Buckhantz. So I feel like it will be reminiscent to not talk about that. What was your first reaction when you saw the news being made official about Buckhantz not returning to the booth as the play-by-play announcer for the team after over 20 years of service? And what do you think about the way that the team handled this whole transition?
Yeah, so to start off first, obviously Steve Buckhantz, you know, great guy. Somebody who, when I was starting out real young doing this, somebody who, hey, it was like, hey, kid, try doing this, try doing that. You know, you'll be fine. Like, don't worry about it. Really great guy, super nice. Will be very missed both by media, by fans at home listening to the broadcast. Definitely going to be an adjustment, to say the least. And I think what makes it all worse, of course, is how the entire process was dragged out and handled overall. In March, April, the news comes out that NBC Sports Washington will not be immediately renewing its contract. Then you have this whole stretch of time, like 5 months going along, where Buckhantz wants to be back, but he's just getting kind of dragged along, not being told what's going on. All he knows is that they're interviewing other candidates. You hear some names like Dan Helly, Dan Feldman, who, you know, kind of makes sense, like, might be bringing people back from who are from this local area. And then, obviously, in the past week, the news finally breaks that they've replaced him with Fox Sports' Justin Kuchar, who a lot of people, I think, had a kind of surprised reaction to, just because he's not really from this area, has no real ties to the area. Buckhantz, obviously, was also pretty hurt by the entire process. He said that he had not spoken to Ted or Zachary Leonsis. He said that team has everything to do with it. Obviously, Leonsis has a decent percentage stake in NBC Sports Washington. So it's not, don't be naive to the fact that this is NBC Sports Washington making the final call that they don't want Buckhantz. Leonsis definitely has some saying that Buckhantz went so far as to say that if Leonsis wanted him back, he would be back.
I tend to directly agree with that. I actually wrote a story in the Washington City paper last year talking about the team when they were doing the predict the game contest, where they were, you know, they had contests where they were giving out $500 rewards if you were able to, you know, whoever got the most answers right on different proposition bets that were going on the screen during the game. And when I did that interview, I got a chance to talk to Damon Phillips, who is the GM over at NBC Sports Washington. And I also talked to Zach Leonsis from Monumental Sports, Ted Leonsis' son. And so and through that process, you know, just a few months ago, you know, they were working collaboratively to ensure that the team was having, you know, the best alternative broadcast and that they were going into the 21st century as far as, you know, trying to implement sports betting into play-by-play announcing. So for them to, you know, kind of turn around, you know, 5 months later and say, oh, well, you know, this is a decision, it's all on NBC Sports, and that, you know, Monumental had nothing to do with it, I think that's kind of very much misleading to the public. And that goes right along with what Steve Buckhantz is saying when he says that, you know, if Ted wanted him back, that he would be back. And so, you know, I think that when we look back at the transition from when Carol Lawson took over for Phil Chenier, I feel like that there was a little bit of an uproar then from Wizards fans. But in reality, you know, the broadcast got better. And so this situation could be exactly the same. But if Monumental Sports doesn't really properly communicate what it is they're trying to do, you know, then how can the fans, you know, kind of get behind that? I feel like the fans would have been a lot more receptive if they would have said, you know what, we're looking to shift into this, you know, sports gambling broadcast, and we're going to be doing this and we're going to be doing that. Then people would have been much more receptive to it. But, you know, it feels kind of like a sleight of hand for them to have Steve Buckhantz, you know, just kind of walk off into the sunset. And as he said, without being able to properly say goodbye to all of his listeners and fans, you know, it seems like they kind of did him a bit of a disservice.
For sure, yeah. I think you hit the nail right on the head. When Phil Chenier was eventually replaced by Carol Lawson, Phil got to say, you know, goodbye to the broadcast. Goodbye to thousands of fans that have been watching him for years and years. Buckhantz will not be getting that opportunity. You know, we might have to get him a live feed to broadcast Wizards games himself. I know some people, they'll turn on the local radio and they're trying to hush up some national commentary that's going on to the TV. We might maybe crank Buckhantz up to a live feed and let him go and keep commentating games. So I know that there'll be a demand for that. But yeah, definitely a sad way to see things go.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a sad way to see things go, and I feel like that might have been the let's hope that that was the last bad communication era of an old regime, and that once we had that monumental basketball press conference yesterday, that you know we can clean the slate and we can start all over with a fresh start and just evaluate the franchise as far as everything they do from now going forward. So I think one of the things that we have to look at is, you know, one of the things with Wizards Twitter, you know, it would be, you know, fire Ernie this, you know, Ted couldn't tweet anything without people saying fire Ernie underneath of it. So, I mean, once, you know, we kind of got Ernie out of there, now, you know, this doesn't really fall on him anymore. This kind of falls on what Ted and what Tommy Shepard's going to do and what Sashi Brown is going to do and what John Thompson III is going to do and, you know, what Brett Greenberg is going to do. So these guys, you know, they have an opportunity. They have a clean slate here to, you know, get back on it. But, you know, the job is going to be difficult, though. So I'm excited to see how this all plays out. I know that you're excited to get back down there for another season. We're going to have a bloggers row popping once again.
for sure.
Yeah, man. So I think that, you know, I feel like with everything that has happened, the only thing that we can do right now is give the team the benefit of the doubt and, you know, just kind of see where the chips fall. Now, I feel like we'll probably know pretty early on whether, you know, this is headed in the right direction or not. And so until then, all we have to do is, you know, look at the moves that they are making and try to evaluate the on-the-court product, which is what should be, regardless of whether they win a lot of games or not, it should be interesting and it should be exciting for next season.
Yeah, and I think people should not get their hopes up too much for next season. I think playoffs are almost out of the question. Tommy kind of, he's not said that, but he's kind of beat around the bush that, oh, they could have run back last year's team, but that would have only been an 8 seed. So they've probably already taken a bit of a step back from that. You might not think that, but at the end of the day, guys like Otto Porter, Bobby Portis, and Jabari Parker, you know, put in points, put in some production.
Yeah.
The Wizards won't really have this year. But to leave it on a little bit of an optimistic note, kind of fights on to 2020-21 season, theoretically you get back a healthy John Wall. He might not be that 5-time All-Star level, but, you know, if he's a serviceable top 10 point guard in the NBA, you know, that's not nothing. Get him, there are the deals. Almost All-NBA caliber player. You got your young trio of Troy Brown Jr., Rui Hachimura, and Thomas Bryant, who potentially could all be 3 starters. And then you likely add another lottery pick, 2020 NBA draft lottery pick. That's not bad. You know, 6 good players, and you'll have a little bit of salary cap space with Jan Mahimi finally off the books.
Yeah, finally off the books, man. So basically, you're saying there's a chance, Neil.
For next season, not this season.
For next season. All right, I'm buying with you, man. I'm a committed. I'm a team player. So you know we're gonna rock with them this year, and we're gonna get excited for next season, man. I really appreciate you coming on again, man. I'm gonna give you a chance to go ahead and plug Hoop District and plug all your stuff and let the people know where they can find you, Neil.
Yeah. So obviously. Find me on Twitter, NeilTheLaw96, but more importantly almost, because I basically do all my tweeting from there anyway, at Hoop District DC on Twitter. Also, follow us on Instagram. You know, we got some great photographers in the crew.
Yeah, shout out Rob, man.
Yeah, shout out Rob Banez, Booba on Instagram. They're doing some great work. That's going up on our Instagram, trying to grow that. You can follow us there at Hoop District. You'll get all of our content if you just follow us in those 2 places. No shade to truth about it, but I got to say, Hoop District, the elite blog of Wizards right now.
Hey, man, no shade taken, man. Y'all are running the game right now, so respect, man. Respect. All the respect.
Appreciate it.
All right, no problem, man. Thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks.